Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Getaway Friday. Friday, June the 26th, 2026. 6:26:26, last Friday in the month of June. 13 and a half minutes past the hour, joined in studio live by Matt Morgan. And as we were talking about earlier, last night, Matt and Sean and I all took the trek to Toledo, Ohio, to the famous Tony Paco's restaurant. Over 1,000 autographed hot dog buns don the walls of Tony Paco's. Five U.S. presidents, sports figures, movie stars, politicians, broadcast icons, they're all there, sports people, from all walks of life, at Tony Paco's, Toledo, Ohio, on the Maumee River. Great place to eat, Matt. Great hot dogs.
Yeah, I think so.
And last night we went up there with legendary Major League Baseball umpire Larry Barnett and his delightful wife, Sharon, who is always very nice. And Larry is now enshrined on the walls of Tony Paco's as he signed a bun. So now, from Marion, if you go up to Tony Paco's, you can look on the wall and find the signature on the hot dog bun of one of the most legendary, if not the most legendary, umpire in the history of baseball, Prospect's own, Nitro West Virginia's own, Larry Barnett. How about that?
Nitro West Virginia.
Absolutely.
That's what's up.
So here is the event from last night. Hope you enjoy, and we'll be back right after this with more programming, but here's the big event. Don't miss this.
Scott Spears here, WGH Talk Radio, and we are at the famous Tony Paco's, Toledo, Ohio, on the Maumee River, and goodness gracious, it is a fun place to be, and we are up here today because one of our favorite people, legendary Major League Baseball umpire Larry Barnett, has now signed a hot dog bun. He will be one of the over 1,000 buns hanging on the wall here at Tony Paco's. Five U.S. presidents, all kinds of people, started with Burt Reynolds back in the 1970s, and now Larry Barnett, it will hang on the wall in immortality, and we are glad of that. Joining me here, I am so glad to say, for this special broadcast, live from Tony Paco's in Toledo, Ohio, home of the Mud Hens, Larry Barnett. Larry, how you doing?
What a great hot dog. I've never had one. This is a neat place. It really is. Now I'm like Klinger.
Well, this restaurant made famous the hit TV show MASH, which you are a fan of. Jamie Farr always talked about Tony Paco's. And here, did you ever think you'd be here one day?
No, I never in my wildest dreams thought I'd be here. But it's been a lot of fun. And the food is great. The hot dogs are super. And it's just everything. My wife she's probably over in the shop buying everything over there to take back. But it's a neat place.
Now, Larry, you had one of the original Tony Paco's Hungarian hot dogs, onion, sauce, and mustard. What's the review?
Well, I probably should have some breath, some for my breath, because they were tremendous. The hot dogs were great. Everything was good. It's what it's meant to be. It's a great hot dog joint.
Now, what does this place remind you of? It's kind of an old-fashioned diner type of a place.
It's like a speakeasy. Back in the Al Capone days, you know, where people assemble and gather. And I think they probably got a great business here.
It's a legendary place, and you can, of course, buy the Tony Paco's products in your favorite grocery store or online. I think they are available online. Now, Larry, what was it like to sign the bun? You touched the bun. Now, it's not a real hot dog bun. We'll let them in on the inside here. What was that bun like you signed?
Well, it was easy to sign with a Sharpie pen. And it was neat. I mean, really, when I sign my name, I always try to make it so everyone can read it. So many signatures I've seen over the years from famous ballplayers, you don't know them from a block punt. So I always take my time and try it. And it was easy to sign. I started to take a bite on it, but I thought I better not.
Now, Larry, how many baseballs would you say you've signed over the course of your career?
Two. I don't know. We get requests all the time, and that's the most flattering thing you could have in your life is when someone writes and says, you know, please sign this for me. I have to tell you a story. There was a young man out in California wrote me, and he said, Larry, I think you were the greatest. Mr. Barnett, I think you were the greatest umpire that ever lived. And I knew right away, didn't know what he was talking about. He said, if you're still alive, would you please sign the index cards and send them back in the self-addressed stamped envelope? And that was probably the most classic thing. I had not only signed his index cards, we sent him a couple of our baseball cards.
Oh, very nice. If you're still alive, huh? That's how they write the letters. That's very nice. Apparently, he didn't check Wikipedia. He should have Googled you. He'd have found that out. Now, Larry, here we are. Have you ever signed a hot dog bun in your life? Hot dogs go hand in hand with baseball.
Baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie. No, I never have. It was a great experience. It was something I've never done, you know, before, and I probably will never do it again, but it was worth a trip to Toledo.
Now, what does it mean, Larry? Because now they will take this hot dog bun, and if somebody from Marion or Prospect or anywhere they're listening to this at comes to Tony Paco's, they can look on the wall, and they will find you, your name, and your bun amongst all these presidents and dignitaries. What's that mean to you?
Well, it's an honor. It's quite an honor, really, to have an umpire do something like that. Our job is just different. Most people, you know, don't know a lot about our job. It's just different. But I enjoyed my life, and I thought I had a great life. But to be able to do stuff like this is fun.
You know, at this point, you know, as life goes along for all of us, what does it mean to look back and reflect on your life? I imagine moments like this are reflection points. What's it like to reflect back at this point?
Well, as I always tell people, I did not have a good life. I've had a fantastic life. We have two beautiful daughters. John, our somewhat of a son, and Derek. And then first of all, we have Carson, our grandson. And he's the apple of all our eyes. And he would have enjoyed coming to Tony Paco's. And, you know, I don't know. I just like my family. And Sharon, she's the glue that holds us all together.
You'll have to get some sauce and boil some hot dogs at home and have Carson over, and you can have some Tony Paco's at your home.
No, he'll make us bring him up here.
That's right. You'll have to bring him up here. Why not? And then you can look for your bun on the wall.
Yeah. I want to make sure they put that up and put a flashing light on it.
That's exactly right. Larry, you're tied three ways, I think. Youngest baseball umpire in Major League history. Tell us your memories of that.
Well, there actually were three of us that went up at the age of 24. Jimmy Evans, Lee Wire, and myself. And I had a Hertz rental car card, and you had to be 25 to rent a car. So I wasn't old enough to rent a car, but I don't know. I was green as the apple on the tree, and I don't think anyone really took me serious for the first 5 years. Everyone tested you, you know, because I looked younger than the players. And it was an experience, but I threw good umpires. Larry Knapp was my second crew chief, and he was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. He really gave me confidence. He worked with me, and because I was green. I was green and probably made some mistakes. But I told someone today, I said, now they just bounce on their heads if they think you miss a pitch. Some of the games I had, he'd have a knot bigger than a baseball in his
head. Well, Larry, when you're calling, when you're out there, 1969, and you're calling a pitch over the plate, it's coming with great velocity. How do you become a good umpire? How do you know if it's a ball or a strike, or how do you know?
You just close your eyes and guess. It sounded good. Strike two. No. You track the ball. You tell people, and they don't understand. If you got to pick the ball up in the pitcher's hand, and you track it. And you can't have tunnel vision. I worked with an umpire his whole career, and he had tunnel vision, and he was an excellent umpire. It's the only guy I've ever seen that could do that. You got to track. You pick the ball up when he's going to throw it, and you follow it in. And either you can do it, or you get another job.
You know, it's just part of baseball. People question the umpire's calls. Do you remember the first time you were ever questioned?
Probably the first game. The first game I had behind the plate was down in Anaheim. Rick Reichert was the big bonus baby for the Angels. I called a pitch on him, a third strike, and he broke his bat over home plate. That was my first ejection. I never forget that. That was the first. And I think during my career, I had 98 ejections in 31 years. And most of those came at the beginning.
Well, what was your rule for when it was too much, when you had to eject somebody?
Well, when he said urine, you may not be. If the guy says urine, boom.
That was it.
Yeah.
You know, the other day I was looking through some of your pictures, and I saw one of you ejecting Lou Piniella, who was the manager of the Reds at that time. Do you remember ejecting Lou Piniella from the game?
Lou was a character. I ejected him up in Cleveland, and he threw his hat, and then he tried to kick his hat. And he missed it three times. And I said to him, Lou, I can guess you weren't a place kicker when you were in high school. And he really got mad then. But he was a character. Lou was a great manager. I had him as a player and a manager. And he was a super person. But he'd just go wacky. He just really would.
How did you know you wanted to be an umpire? How did that all come to be?
I just went right out of high school. Went to the umpire school. And at the end of the class, I'd never really umpired any. I graduated number one. And I started out, went to the Midwest League for 2 years, went to the Texas League for 3 years, and at the end of that, I went right to the major leagues from Double A.
What's the big difference between the major leagues and Double A?
Money. you're in the show. Like Sharon, before we weren't married till I'd been in the big leagues 2 years. She missed the Texas League and the Midwest League, so she didn't get to see all that.
What was all the travel like?
That was probably the worst thing. You know, basically our married life, I was gone half the time. And Sharon took care of the girls. She took care of the house. She took care of everything. And then when I retired, I came home and tried to change everything. And she let me know real quick that wasn't going to happen. So then we came to an understanding.
And it's lasted all these years.
56 years.
56 years.
Best thing that happened in my life.
Yeah. Perfect. Larry, when you look back at your career, what is the moment that you remember the most?
I remember the toughest thing was the 75 series. When they threatened to shoot Susan, our oldest daughter. And that was tough on me. It was tough on Sharon. It was tough. Susie really, I don't think, knew about it. But, you know, it was just that. That was the worst part of my career.
You know, hard to believe, 1975, over a call in the World Series with Boston, 51 years ago now, long time ago. Take somebody through that. What happened, and why was it so controversial for somebody who might not understand it now?
Well, it was, I forget who was batting now. He leaned back on a pitch that was in on him, and he bunted the ball. And he broke for first base, and Fisk broke for the ball. And there was a bump at home plate. And then Fisk picked the ball up and threw it to retire the guy that was on first and threw it into center field and then wanted interference. The rule said when a catcher and a batter runner have contact in the home plate area, there's no violation and nothing should be called. Now, all the people 51 years ago that yelled at me in Boston are probably, most of them are dead. So, but I mean, we used to go up to Boston. I'd have a young umpire on my crew, and Sherm Fuller, who was the announcer, and he'd say, "Umpiring third base, Larry Barnett. Barnett, third base." And people would call me every name in the book. And a young umpire would look around and say, "Does this happen all the time?" I said, "Yeah." Really.
So they had a long memory in Boston.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, it's a great sports town. They had great teams up there, you know, the Celtics, the Patriots, the Red Sox. It's a great city.
You know, when that all happened, how quickly after the call did you know that there was trouble?
Well, when we start getting death threats.
Yeah.
And then the FBI guarded us. And then Marion County Sheriff Max Ross stayed with us at the house. And every time I would go out to speak, I was really on the demand on the speaking circuit. Because they put Major World Series umpire Larry Barnett, and you'd read it for thinking that I'd been shot. And we would go, but we always had security. And that wasn't that much fun.
When did that finally all die down? How many years would you say it took?
Well, in Boston, it took about 20. But no, it was going by the next spring. You know.
When did you know it was time to hang it up?
I just got tired of traveling. I was 54 years old. I'd been on the road all those years. I probably should have stayed a little longer. Reflecting back, you say, what I should have done, I probably should have stayed a little longer. But I was just ready to go, and I don't have any regrets.
Your 30-year career in baseball, what's the biggest change you saw, 69 to 99?
The exact money.
Money?
The great amount of money. I remember when Al Kaline of the Detroit Tigers, whom I thought was the perfect player, made $100,000, and everyone said, that's the ruination of baseball, it'll never survive. And we all know that wasn't true. But there's great athletes. These kids today are great athletes. I give them all the credit in the world. They're good ball players. And the umpires working today, they're under a lot of stress because everything is on. When I first came up, we had one game a week on Saturday afternoon. Now you have 40,000 TVs watching every game.
Now, when you were in the game, did you have a favorite team?
Oh, no. Uh-uh. My favorite thing was the first of every month. That was payday.
Did you have a favorite team?
No.
None at all?
Absolutely not.
Do you have a favorite team?
What question is that?
Well, I don't know. I thought, do you have a favorite team today?
I watch the Guardians. The Indians. I hate that name, the Guardians. Yeah. Why they changed that, I'll never know. And Sharon, my wife, and her dad loved the Indians. So my dad, her dad used to farm, and he would listen on his combine or something to the radio, Herb score in the Indian games. So he was an avid Indian fan. So when I get a chance to meet him, I hope he said, God, I hope I thought I got rid of you.
Larry, you were also in a motion picture with Tom Selleck. What was that like?
He was super. He was fantastic, and I remember we were in Detroit, and he came in our dressing room up at Tiger Stadium, the old Tiger Stadium, and Sharon and the girls were outside, and I said, Tom, would you go out and meet my family? Oh, he said, Larry, sure. And he went out, I introduced him to Sharon, and the girls couldn't say anything. They were just all in all of him, Susie, and I think Katie was there, I'm not sure, but that was a good time, but he was just... And then I got home, and he sent me a belt buckle from Mr. Baseball. I have that in my home. I think I showed it to you when you were down there.
When you look back at that experience, well, first of all, how did the movie come about?
Well, they just called and said, would you want to do it? And we went up to New York. Mike Keith was a catcher, and we were up there for like a week. We had rain, and they'd go out every day, and they'd shoot certain things. And then, I don't know, I don't think I'd want to do that for a living. But it was long and hard after about 3 or 4 days. But they had a schedule and you had to follow it.
But a fun experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, when you see the movie, what do you think about?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't think anything about it, really. I don't know. That may sound weird, but it's just something I did.
Something you did. Now, something you also did, met two presidents that we saw the pictures the other day. Tell about meeting President Richard Nixon.
Well, we were in New York at the Yankee Stadium. And in every dressing room, you have a clubhouse attendant that takes care of everything. They clean our shoes or they wash our clothes, get our uniforms pressed, whatever. And there's a knock at the door. And I was the crew chief. And Joey, who was the attendant, came to me and he said, Chief, he said, the president would like to come in. And I said, the president of what? He said, the president of the United States. So I said, well, you better open the door and let him in. So President Nixon came in, sat down and talked to us for about an hour. He's a baseball nut. And I don't care. It's an honor to meet any president. I don't care what their political persuasion is. It's just an honor. And I always refer to them as the president. One umpire I was with in the 84 World Series and... President Bush, the elder, came in our dressing room out in San Diego, and he kept calling them George. And I thought, Jesus, that just, to me, wasn't right, because they deserve to be called Mr. President. And even when they live, they'll always be Mr. President.
Now, also, there's a great picture of you with Jerry Ford. What was Jerry Ford like?
He was just a nice guy. We ran into him in Minneapolis in a hotel, the Hyatt Hotel in Minneapolis. And they had a photographer with him. We asked him to take a picture, and he did. So he was. I didn't see him long, but I had a picture. That's an honor.
Well, it's an honor to meet presidents of the United States. And again, five of the presidents have autographed buns here right at Tony Paco's.
Well, I think they're going to put my bun right with them.
I think you should be with the presidents, Larry.
I want a light on it.
You want a light on it with the presidents. We'll see if we can get that arranged.
I'll probably put mine in the bathroom.
No, it'll be at a good place, a good place. When you look back at the game, who do you think was the greatest player of all time?
A couple of them. Ken Griffey Jr. was as good a player as I've ever seen. And when he went over to Cincinnati, because that was home, when his dad was there, that was home to him. And he went over there and got hurt, so they didn't get to see the Griffey we saw in Seattle. And another one is Derek Jeter. One of the nicest men I've ever been around in my life. It just, if you had a son, you'd want him to be like those two.
What makes a great baseball player, in your opinion?
Well, they have a lot of talent. They know how to play the game. They're good athletes. And these kids today are very good. But, you know, we had some very, very special ones, and I'm sure there are special ones now.
What's been the best part of this great retirement you've had?
Being at home, being at Prospect Park. I'm down there every day. Some days I go down and clean the bathrooms, and if one of the 4th of July things down there, I was walking, one of the stools got plugged up, and I'm walking across with a plunger, and someone yelled at me, hey Barnett, you finally found something you could do. But I love the park. I'm there every day. We have two guys, Manny and Dean, they're there, and they work every day, and I go over and help mow, and now I'm a little stoved up. They help me on and off the mower so I don't fall. But I just love going over there. That's what I want to do. I told Sharon, I said, the ideal thing for me is to take my golf cart and sit under a shade tree over there and have the good Lord take me home. That would be a good end.
What was it about the park that was such a grab for you, that was such a light?
Well, they really didn't have a lot of stuff there. We had one guy working there, and he's walking throughout the park going from building to building with his tool belt in his hand. So when I got in there, we bought some new gators for them, and we modernized the park. And I tell you, there were four of us that did that. Jerry Lane, myself, Martin Bernhardt, the Mike Roofing, and Carl Hughes from the Faye Bank. Those guys were always great at opening their checkbooks, and that helped that park more than I could ever tell you.
When we were just there the other day, you were kind enough to give us a tour, and it's a beautiful, beautiful park. Great press boxes, great fields, all kinds of stuff. Pool is great over there, a great veterans memorial.
Yeah, that was, I was riding around with Dick Hicks, who was working at the park at the time, and I said to him, I said, I would love to build a veterans memorial right between Jerry Lane Field and my field. And I didn't think any more about it. Don't you know, 1 year later, Dick had raised $85,000 from donations, and they built that memorial. And it is, I'm prejudiced. Wow, that's a beautiful, everything's granite. We didn't spare any expense, but Dick Hicks spearheaded that thing.
Now, one thing I want to make sure we get in here, you have a point of light from George H.W. Bush. Now, this was one of the great things that George H.W. Bush did when he was president. How did that come to be?
Well, a good friend of mine in 1976 was the past national commander for the DAV, Disabled American Veterans. And he asked me if when I was traveling around the country, would I like to visit some veterans' hospitals? Well, I said to him, I said, Jack, how much fun can that be? 27 years later, I had made over 3,000 visits. And at the time, there was only two of us that have been to every veterans hospital in this country. And when I was in Chicago, they had five VAs in the morning for a couple hours. I'd go out and see the guys and gals, and I just got into it. And I've been to all the VAs, and that's how that came about. I received an honorary doctorate's degree from Bowling Green State University for my work with veterans. But it was all through the Disabled American Veterans.
Is there a story that sticks out in your mind about the years visiting veterans?
Yeah, the best one was Indianapolis. I was in hospice ward, and there was a man laying in bed, and his wife was there and his son. Now, this man hadn't really responded for a week, and I walked in and I said to his wife, told her, my name is Larry Barnett, I'm a retired Major League umpire, and I just came by to see and say hello to the veterans today, and that's what I'm doing here. He opened his eyes, and he looked at me and he said, never in my wildest dreams would I thought I would have the opportunity to meet someone like you, and now that I have, I'm ready to go. And he died a couple of days later. You don't forget stuff like that.
No, when you reflect back on that today, what's it make you think about?
Well, at my age, you say hello to me and I'll cry. So, they're very emotional. I wish that I would have written a book about all those trips. I've been to San Juan, Puerto Rico. I was down in Puerto Rico with the national commander, and they had an audience probably of 800 vets setting out. And I'm up telling some jokes, and one of the vets raised his hand. He said, I have a question. He said, I've heard enough of this happy horse, and I'm not going to finish that. I've got some serious problems, and I need some answers. And I said, you're very lucky. I've got the national commander with me. Now, Dennis Joyner was a quadruple amputee, and called rolling himself out on the stage. He said, thanks a lot. But just stuff. I remember stuff. I can reflect back on that. That was a great thing that I enjoyed doing. And Art Wilson, who was the national adjutant, said, you're probably the most recognizable person that's in a veterans hospital.
You know, when you think about veterans and the due that they seem to be getting now, which is a very nice thing, here we are on the cusp of the 250th anniversary of our country next week. What do you think of how the veterans are treated today? The things have certainly gotten better.
1,000% better. People realize, and the people in the hospitals, that when they realize what they're there for, and that's to take care of our veterans. The greatest thing you have, and we have this on the back of the memorial at Prospect, all gave some gave all. And that pretty well says it all.
When you reflect back to your childhood, what do you think allowed you to have the life that you had?
My mom and dad had a strong base. They were good people, hardworking people, not rich people, but they raised us right.
Came from West Virginia?
I was born in West Virginia, Nitro, and in fact, I was born down there, and they have a museum at the World War I Museum, and it's got Lou Burdett, Kathy Mateo, and myself are all in the Hall of Fame down there. So those things are neat.
And there's a historical plaque down there? Yeah. Well, what's it like to get something like that? That's quite an honor.
It was a neat day. My family was all down there. The girls were there. Sharon was there. And it was a neat day. It was a neat day, and they did it upright.
Now, you could have lived anywhere. Why did you stay in Prospect?
Sharon wonders that every day. That was just home. I didn't think of going anyplace else. But, no, we raised our children there. Sharon went to Elgin. I went to Elgin, graduated, and both our girls graduated from Elgin.
Would you have ever thought when you were growing up in high school that you would have the life that you have?
No. I always wanted to be a highway patrolman. I really did, because I love that Smokey the Bear hat. That's what I wanted to do, but I'm glad I made the choice that I did. Not that there's anything wrong with what they do.
You know something, Larry, the other day when we were at your house and looking at some of the memorabilia that you have down in your office, is there a favorite piece of memorabilia or a favorite award that you have?
I think the picture with Ripken when he broke Gehrig's record, where he's tipping his hat and I've got my hands on my hips looking at him with George Fabregas, that's history. That's baseball history.
Well, you know, there are some great things there of an autographed baseball with the Bush family.
Got them all. We had, we were in the White House and Sharon was talking to Barbara, Mrs. Bush, and the president walked over and Mrs. Bush had signed her name, Barbara Bush, And I asked the president, would you please sign? He looked at it and said, not with her name. And he signed it. And then when President W. came in, and Laura, the DAV took that to the White House, and they signed it. So I've got all four. That means a lot. That's two presidents, two first ladies.
Absolutely, absolutely. And why do you think that baseball still sustains? There are people on baseball fields all across this country tonight, a nice summer night, playing baseball. Why does it still maintain?
I think it's the greatest game going, but I'm prejudiced. When I say that, I nothing against soccer, football, or anything. I just love baseball.
Scott Spears near the Maumee River in beautiful Toledo, Ohio, with legendary Major League Baseball umpire Larry Barnett, who tonight took his place among five United States presidents here and signed a bun at famous Tony Paco. So next time you're in Toledo or make a trip to Toledo, stop, look on the wall, find Larry's bun. It's here at Tony Paco's. Larry, this has been fun.
That's not bad for an old kid from Prospect.
That's right. Well, you know, and that's what we were talking about when we went to break there, was this kid growing up in Prospect, looking at the life you've had, what advice would you give to somebody on how to have a good life?
If you have a dream, go for it. Don't let anyone tell you no. Keep trying. You know, and it just worked for me. What are the odds, you know, of me making the major leagues as an umpire? I mean, and then the good thing, Jerry Lane from that same town had 34 years in the major leagues. He and my nephew used to ride back and forth with me to Cleveland to keep me awake when I was driving home after a night game. And Jerry had 34 years. Buck Rogers had over 30 years from Prospect as a manager, player, and a coach. Randy Mobley, president of AAA Baseball. And Brian Agler, the WNBA. Well, how many championships did he win there from that little town? I venture a guess that a town of 1,000 people, there isn't another one, there might be in America, that has that kind of thing happen.
You know, Larry, you have a unique personality. I mean, you've been in movies. You've met presidents. Not all umpires do that. You got a lot of press, certainly from the 75 World Series and other places. Did this great thing with the veterans. Awarded awards by president, the Point of Light. What do you think, when you look back at yourself, what do you think was different?
I think the best thing was our family. And like I said, Sharon was the base of that. She made us all sane. And she still has to do that with me. And if I get out of line, she tells. I think that's where I got. It started with my mom and dad, and then it started with the woman. It continued with the woman that I married. And I'm just content.
Tell us a little bit about your parents.
Well, my dad worked at Asphalt Paving. My brother, I had seven siblings. There's only two of us left. And I'm the youngest. So they all spoiled me. They say, that's what they say. But we didn't know we were poor. I don't think we were dirt poor, but we didn't have any extra things. I mean, you know, for my graduation, I got a bicycle. We just bought Clark Carson a new car.
Things have changed.
Yeah, I'd say, no, but I mean, it's just, I wouldn't trade that for anything. And then Sharon's mother and father, they were just, I was accepted into that household, and they had all those girls, and he was a farmer, but they all knew how to work on the farm.
Do you have any regrets?
Not really. I can't think of one. I tell people, I haven't had a good life. I've had a great life. Right now, I'm doing some stuff with cancer. And at 81 years old, I've decided not to do anything with it. And that's just for me. I don't want to tell anyone else, don't you do the way. That's for me. And I just figure at 81 years old, and as I told Sharon before, I'd like to be in my park. I ride my golf cart around Prospect, sitting in there on the shade tree, and have the good Lord take me home. That's the most important trip I'll make the rest of my life.
You know, that's interesting. When you were on with us back in December, you had talked about your coming to faith in your life. How did that evolve?
Well, it, our home. You know, when I was at home, going to church was not an option. you went and you behaved yourself. And so I was brought up that way. And then you get, you know, and then I'm on the road. You don't have a chance to go to a church. But when I retired, I just started to go on. I really did. And I did. I stood up when I, at the Lutheran Church in Prospect, and told everyone that the prognosis. And I told them, I said, I'm going to make one more trip. And that's with my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ to heaven. And if I can do that, my life will be complete.
You know, you were on, Larry, with us, and you told us what was going on with your health. And what's the update at this point?
You know, I feel good. I get very tired. Sharon and I were talking about that coming up. I can walk to the end of the driveway, and I'm just worn out. So, and one of my best friends, Stan Foose, was in Vietnam. He was a forward observer for an artillery unit, and he's got Agent Orange, and he's going through a lot of cancer now. So we've got to bet who's going to go first. And Stan keeps saying, I hope you go first. And But no, that's the kind of relationship we have. But he's one of my best friends.
You know, a lot of this has to be attitude. And that was one of the things when you were on with us back in April and told us the diagnosis and what was going on. We had people, so many people after that, talking about the attitude that you have approached this with. How do you do that? They said not everybody's able to do that.
I try to do this with dignity, because I saw someone else that's very special to me that went through this, and she did it with dignity, and I'm trying to emulate her.
Well, I think you're there.
I think I am.
Yeah. Are there times that it's difficult?
Not really. Every day I get up, I say thank you for another day. Before I go to sleep, I say thank you for another night.
That's good. A couple things I want to cover here, then we'll wrap this up, Larry. How do you develop a good call as an umpire?
I don't know. TV has changed umpiring. Before umpiring with TV, you didn't see guys. Dutch Rennert, remember, he was the guy that would yell and walk out. Those were all stuff that they put on. They were good umpires, but I think TV changes you.
For the good or the bad?
I don't think it's bad. No. I don't really think it's bad. Everyone has their own image and what they want to project. And I always said to people, I was never thought of myself as being the greatest umpire that ever lived. But no one worked any harder at the job that I had. They could say, God, you missed that, but he works at his job, and that's the biggest compliment I felt that I could have.
Career-wise, what was the highlight?
That's tough. I worked 4,231 major league games. That's a long lot of games. I every day basically was a highlight. My life was on a high, basically, and that's what I tried to have it.
You know, and not everybody does end up that way, but you have, and that's a great thing to be able to say at this point.
Well, I think he's watched after me. And I always said, you know, if something's going to happen to me, please give me time to get everything as right as I possibly can. And he's granted me that wish, and I will not screw it up.
Is there anything you still want to do, accomplish?
Well, I'd like to see my grandson graduate. He's got a year to go. Sharon says I'm going to make that, so that would be nice. But if he does, he's a good young man. He calls me every night, and my daughters call me every morning. So I've got family. That's all I need.
That's not too bad. What message would you like to leave for people who might be listening to this?
Well, like I say, what I chose to do with the problem I have with my health is for me alone. And that's my decision. When you have a problem like that, you have to make your own decision. And whatever you decide is the right decision, as long as you make it.
When people look back at your name 100 years from now in the history books or on the internet, wherever we are in 100 years, what do you hope they know most about Larry Barnett?
That I did some good stuff for the veterans. That's very important to me. And I worked at my job as an umpire. That's And I was a good family man. That's probably the most important.
That's not too bad. Larry Barnett, legendary Major League Baseball umpire from Tony Paco's here in Toledo, Ohio. And Larry, one more time, how were the hot dogs here in Toledo?
Fantastic.
Nobody better than Larry Barnett. Scott Spears heading for the dugout from Toledo.
And again, that was the broadcast last night. Matt making more noise than possible. As always, broadcast last night from Toledo, Ohio. Tony Paco's as Larry Barnett signed the bun and went into the pantheon of over 1,000 signed hot dog buns on the wall at Tony Paco's. Do you got like the jitters over there? What are you doing?
Moving?
You got like the shakes or something.
Nah, the chair just make a lot of noise.
Oh, get the WD-40 out. Anyway, Larry Barnett, one of the all-time greats in the world of broadcasting. Because when he's on here, he's always entertaining. But certainly, Major League Baseball umpire, legendary work with the veterans, just a nice man. And as I was leaving last night, and we were all leaving last night, Larry said, anytime you want me on, call me. You know, I think Larry should have a regular spot every week on the show. If Larry wants to come on once a week, I think we're going to make that happen.
I think that'd be good.
I'd like to have Larry on once a week. One morning, I know he goes over to the park every morning. Maybe one day a week he can come over here, and we'll sit for 2 hours, and we'll talk about whatever's going on in the world, or whatever. See, he's fun to talk to. I just like talking to him.
I think so. Yeah, Larry's an interesting kind of guy. He's got all kinds of stories to tell.
And we'll see about getting a light on his hot dog up there in Tony Paco's in Toledo. So when you go up there now, look for Larry Barnett's bun. Marion, Ohio people should do that. It's only 90 minutes from here. Take the trek up to the Tony Paco's and see what you can get done. And as I said earlier in the week, the work that Larry's done for that park over there is tremendous. I got a tour from Larry this past Monday, and that was terrific.
You got what?
A tour.
Oh, I'm just deaf. I guess I misheard you.
If you had the headphones on, you'd probably hear what I was saying better.
Well, I mean...
You're a little mess today, aren't you?
I took the headset off.
In any event, 740-383-9944. We got about 5 minutes left in this particular hour. We have a whole nother hour to go. I hope Larry and Mrs. Barnett were out there listening to that. It's kind of hard to hear when you're taping in the restaurant because the restaurant's loud. But when we play it back on the microphone, I think it came across very, very nicely. And, you know... I don't know what Larry's doing on the 4th in the afternoon. Maybe he can join our big 4th of July program.
He might, yeah.
Well, Larry, if you're listening to this, maybe we'll, if you have an hour on the 4th in the afternoon, maybe he can help us with the big 4th of July doings, 250th anniversary we've got coming up here. When is that? Next Saturday. 4th of July is on a Saturday this year.
Well, that's nice, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's going to be at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 1 to 2, I think.
Well, you know, it's coming up.
So if anybody's got anything to say, we got 4 minutes left in this segment.
You might want to go pin down.
740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give us a buzz, and we'll see what is going on. I think there's going to be some big things coming up very soon. You know, that I think that was the start of a good honoring of a great man, fun man. I was trying to think of the first time I met Larry, and I really don't remember when it was, but I do know that probably 17, 16 years ago, I don't know if he remembers this, he came on a program I was doing. It was a panel show. I have a picture of this somewhere. And what a panel we had. I think it was Fran Vall. I'm only going to remember the people who were a part of it. But it was Fran Vall, Charlie Evers, Marianne Michaels, myself, Larry Barnett, and former governor of Ohio, John Gilligan. And I don't know if I have a copy of that program, but boy, I have a picture. I have a picture from it. I think that was, God, 2009, 2010, maybe somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe 16, 17 years ago.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, so I remember that, but that wasn't the first time I'd met Larry, but that was a fun event. But he's come on anytime I've ever asked him to, and it's always been a lot of fun.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I'd Yeah.
Great career. Great. What's the most interesting thing about his career to you?
Well, probably just the fact that he got to the MLB. I guess the American League, because I don't know that the MLB was. I don't know how that whole thing works. Don't know anything about baseball. But he went to the American League, and he was the youngest umpire. I think he's. I don't know if he was the longest or is the longest tenure, but I know he was there for 30 some odd years.
The youngest. I think it's a three-way tie now, but he was at the time.
Also. There's a newspaper clipping that says where he was asked about being the I'd assume about being the youngest umpire, and then the quote is because I'm a talented young man.
Oh, good.
That's good. I like confidence. Confidence is nice.
You know, he used to eject people from games.
He said the first time he ejected somebody was his first game in the big leagues.
Maybe we can have him come in here one morning, and eject me from the show.
You're
out of here. You've been on
that's
too long.
To wrap it up.
You gotta go. Yeah, see, that'd be good. That'd be a moment people would remember. I did. I asked him last night who his favorite team was. Now, what I meant was, I don't think I elucidated that question very well. What I meant was who was your favorite team growing up as a baseball fan? And I think he meant, because I didn't ask the question very well, who was your favorite team when you were umpiring? Like there might have been some favoritism or something.
I thought it was just like, did you have a favorite team?
I don't know.
And he was like,
he didn't like that question.
Yeah, he didn't like that question.
He didn't like that question. But that's what I meant. So there, I cleared that one up for everybody. All right. Well, I hope Larry and Mrs. Barnett got to hear it. And if they're out there listening, I hope they're having a wonderful day. And I'm sure we'll hear from them very soon. And so on and so forth. And by the way, there is video of that. And hopefully that'll be up by the time the weekend's over, available on the internet. So just search Larry Barnett, Scott Spears, Tony Pacos on YouTube, I would imagine is where it'll end up, sometime maybe Saturday or Sunday, and it should be up there. And you can watch what you just heard. We'll just hope the video turned out well. All right, we're coming back right after this. Don't go anywhere.
There's no rhythm to it. Of course, it doesn't. I think in the end it doesn't matter, but it's just whatever you think. So I thought, Mama, I wanted the M.